right, welcome
to Film Talk Q&A.
That movie podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Quincy.
And we are here to talk about what's currently in theaters right now as we're speaking.
Now playing. In theaters now. What the hell do we call this segment?
Theaters.
Sure. We'll call it that, this podcast. Go ahead.
All right.
So Alex got several that he's seen. I have not seen. I've only seen a few. So I'll jump in once I've seen them. Take it, Alex.
All right. Well, I did see The Collection, which I know you've seen The Collector.
Yep.
You liked it, right?
I did.
Yeah. This is definitely worth your time to go see. If you enjoyed The Collector, you've got Josh Stewart coming back as Arkin. Which okay. Was...
what does that mean?
The guy that basically was taken at the end of The Collector. The thief that broke in.
Yeah, he gets taken at the end. Obviously, I guess I don't remember the ending too much. Basically, The Collector is about this guy who... his boss owes him some money, so he decides to break into his house to, like, steal something to get, like, what's owed him. And when he breaks into the house, he realizes that a different, more twisted psychopath is previously already in that house and has set up a bunch of booby traps to prevent the family from leaving that house. So now this guy has to figure out how the hell he's going to get out of the house without this other crazy dude realizing he's in there. I thought it was a very original setup for slasher flick, which is essentially all it is. It's kind of a slasher meets...
it's like a slasher thriller. Yeah.
Type of, yeah. So this is the sequel.
This is the sequel, yeah.
Although they're really not pimping it as a sequel at all.
They're not. It's kind of cool. It almost stands on its own, kind of like Desperado to El Mariachi. You know, it helps if you see the first one, because they do reference events from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, yeah, they were
required.
They were trying to kind of almost bring it in and make it its own entity. It sort of turns into like a Aliens type of setup where essentially he escapes in the opening of the film because the Collector has set up this... it's kind of silly if you stop and think about it, but it's kind of interesting in like just a fun visual way. But there's this huge rave party going on. And he set up all these elaborate traps that essentially just kill everybody, except for one person. But true to form, you know, the Collector like brought in the box, you know. So, but this time it turns out that, you know, Arvin was in the box, or Arkin,
box.
Rather, the trunk.
Okay.
The trunk that always had somebody in it.
Oh, okay.
You know, and so yeah, this time it was Arkin that was in the trunk, but he manages to escape. So, while he's there in the hospital, being treated for every bump, bruise, broken bone, flayed skin, and everything else that he picked up from the first movie, he gets picked up by these people that were hired by the father of the girl who just got kidnapped.
Well, make sure you don't do what most previews do and spoil everything about the movie. You know, let me still kind of, when I see it, I'd like to watch the plot unfold. I don't need a play-by-play.
Don't worry, there's still plenty more to go off of, but I'm
okay,
just saying that's kind of the setup.
Because that's kind of what the previews show, too. So
yeah,
there's everything in the preview that you've seen is done, like, in the first act of the movie, then?
Yeah.
And there's a lot more to
that's
it?
That's the setup. There's...
huh. Okay, now I'm even more intrigued.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said, having enjoyed the first one, I think you'd really like it.
Next. Yeah.
Next up, Killing Them Softly. This one's a little different from The Collection.
That's the Brad Pitt movie that from the previews looks like it's just a bunch of has-been mafia types talking, yelling at each other. Right?
Basically, events have been set in motion.
It's like a card game gone wrong or something like that, right?
The card game got knocked off. And somebody has to pay for it. So you've got these hitmen who are essentially planning the hit, you know, as far as who they have to take out, how they have to do it, who has to do it. It's really good. I mean, it's a pretty entertaining film. Brad Pitt does a really good job.
Yeah, it looked like a rental to me.
You know, I mean,
anytime I see a preview and it's just a bunch of people talking,
yeah,
that immediately falls into the "I'll wait for DVD." You know, I mean, that's just.
I mean, it's got James Gandolfini in it. You know,
so
he's,
what?
He's playing a mob.
So did the Mexican. So,
well,
yeah. I mean, name anything he's done really that's worth a crap. Hello. Okay. So moving on. I mean, it's got Ray Liotta. Who cares?
Yeah, Ray Liotta.
It's got Ray Liotta getting the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
That intrigues me. It's same. Like, this is what you get for no escape. Is that what they do in the movie? This is what you get for turbulence. Bam! Bam!
Sam Shepard playing a mob boss. I mean, come on.
Sam Shepard.
Yeah.
So it's essentially just kind of a mob movie?
It's a little more than that, but yeah, it's...
Like, if you like mob movies, if mob like, dramas, if you like,
yeah,
you
if you like mob
it.
Movies... Yeah, check it out. It's worth your time.
Was it directed by anyone? Oh, yeah, it's directed by the guy that did the assassination of Jesse James by that coward, whatever. That movie was so boring. So this movie's better than that one?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, good. I'll check it out.
You know, and this is coming from the guy who actually enjoyed the assassination of Jesse James by the coward, Robert...
Lee Ford or...
Ford, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I get bored saying the name of that movie. I just get halfway through and I'm like, I don't care anymore.
All right. Next up is the David O. Russell outing, Silver Linings Playbook.
Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, you know, acting again.
Yep, Jackie Weaver. Julia Stiles is cast as Jennifer Lawrence's sister, which... It's actually pretty good that you think about it, you know, because the two of them, it's like, I'd have never thought who could you get to play sisters, but it's like, you put the two of them on screen, you're just going, I see that. But
so did you like it?
Oh, man, I did.
Is it a dramedy, or is it more drama than comedy? Because I know the previews kind of make it up, like, hey, look, it's whimsical and funny, it's a romantic, but then you read anything about it, it's like, there's nothing romantic or whimsical and funny about this. Just yeah. Sounds depressing.
It's, no, it's not depressing. It's...
So it's that rare mental illness movie that isn't depressing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that?
Hmm.
Sometimes they actually come out with one.
Amazing.
And this is that one.
Nice. So you're really good.
I would recommend it, yeah.
I've heard, it feels like it's kind of polarizing, because I've heard a lot of people just say it's horrible.
Hmm. I don't know. I've seen it twice, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
The first time I saw it, because I was curious to see it, and I wanted to see it. Second time I saw it, admittedly, my mom was in town, and she was just like, you want to go see a movie? And I'm like, what do you want to see? She's like, this, or this.
Okay.
I'm like, well, we've missed that. That I have no interest in. Let's go see that. So
you enjoy it the second time?
I enjoyed it just as much the second time around. So.
All right. Yeah, it's definitely on my list of things to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well,
it's worth the time, trust me.
But. Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Not in the theaters, but, you know, if I got in the theaters free,
hey.
It'd be different.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah.
And then also in theaters, Hitchcock. Yep. Man, do you like Alfred Hitchcock?
Nah, he's all right.
Really?
He's all right. I mean, I appreciate for what he did. I think for what he was in that moment of time in film history,
mm-hmm.
he was needed. Especially with Psycho. I mean, what movie has the balls to kill off the leading lady, you know, halfway through the movie?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, so in that aspect, yes. Do I think he's the best thing since sliced bread and that he was like the father of suspense? And I think he gets a little bit too much appreciation.
Yeah.
Kind of like Orson Welles. I mean, I don't think that the guy just wipes his ass and it's magic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I saw the previews for Hitchcock. It looked interesting.
Okay.
Didn't make me want to run out and see it, but once again,
yeah.
Coming on DVD, it's probably worth an hour and a half.
Okay.
Two hours of my life.
On DVD, for you, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Personally, I enjoyed the hell out of this film.
And it's just his making of Psycho, right?
Yes. This is
now,
like...
Now, is it accurate? Do you know?
As close as I know, because admittedly I'm not up on my behind the scenes of Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay.
But I'm taking a lot of this at face value since it is based off of the Stephen Rebello book, Alfred Hitchcock and the Making of Psycho. So I'm going to take for granted that this guy actually did his homework. And
that it's pretty authentic what you're saying.
The filmmakers didn't embellish too much behind the scenes. This is like the biopic done right.
Yeah.
Because I get so tired of, especially like anything that Milos Forman does. where he just starts painting with broad strokes. It's like, okay, he was born here, went to school here, college, blah, blah, blah. Early years, later years, this is what made him famous, this is where he died, blah, blah, blah. And you're just going, okay, wow, any one of these stories would have been really cool to find out. This just picks
an isolated and
it's like, this is Alfred Hitchcock behind the scenes during the time that he was filming Psycho.
Yeah, so it doesn't try to be a Cliff Notes of his life.
Exactly. It doesn't tell you where he was born, what he did, when he got married, who
so
he
it's not Ray.
Exactly.
Or Walk Hard.
Well, yeah.
Although Walk Hard was the best biopic made ever, and it wasn't even a real character. So, Hitchcock... Basically, if you look at the previews and it looked fun and entertaining, go see it.
Exactly. Because I love the way they did it. They've really thrown in a lot of the Hitchcock standards, just especially from the way they open and end the film. So, yeah, if you show up late, just go see something else and come back to it later. But, yeah, Anthony Hopkins plays Hitchcock.
He wasn't distracting, because he sure does look distracting in the commercials.
In small doses, you know, yeah, you're just kind of going, oh, what? Yeah, that's Anthony Hopkins under a bunch of makeup. But once you start getting into the film, you know, you're just like, wow, it's like, yeah, you're sitting there looking, he's going, wow, that guy is really, you know, doing a good job with this. It's like Michelle Williams in My Weekend with Marilyn, or My Week with Marilyn.
Of course, I never saw that.
Well. You should have.
No, I would never see that movie. Why? What about that movie would you think I would enjoy? Exactly. So quit recommending me shit that you know I'm not going to like. You just want me to yell at you. You just want me to be like, why did you have me watch that? Go on! Never get that hour back in my life. And yes, that means I turned it off 30 minutes before it was over. So just, it works.
Exactly, yeah. In fact, this is one of those few movies that, I mean, sure, it's like the cast is really good. You know, of course, you got Anthony Hopkins, Helen Mirren plays Alma Reville, Scarlett Johansson plays Janet Leigh, James Darcy does an incredible Anthony Perkins, and you even have Michael Wincott, who I've had a hard time kind of recognizing. He plays Ed Gein, because, of course, the whole Psycho story is based off Ed Gein, and there's various flashbacks. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense in the context of the film. But the hair, the makeup, and costume people, this is their film. Because, like I said, I mean, these people do a really good job, but it's like Scarlett Johansson, once you get her in, like, the hair and the makeup and everything, you're just going, holy fuck, it's Janet Leigh. You know? Like it's the same with Anthony Hopkins. I mean, once you get all the prosthetics and everything on, he starts moving around and walking and talking. You're going, fuck, it's a bit Hitchcock. It's an amazing film. Next up, the Ang Lee film, Life of Pi.
Not to be confused with American Pie.
No, this one's actually good. So,
Ang Lee's 3D magnus opus about the kid who basically gets in a shipwreck and is stuck on a boat with a tiger.
Yep. I enjoyed this movie. I thought this was just visually brilliant. The storyline, yeah, I thought was really good. I enjoyed everything about this.
It's one of those rare movies that I would say is truly beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And not just visually. I mean, I thought it was beautiful in many different facets. And it's one of those that the more I think about it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it when I was watching it.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that you need to see it in 3D. You need to go see it on the big screen in 3D because it was amazing. 3D, it was, I mean, you really felt like you were stranded in that ocean with them. Mm-hmm. And I know from the description, it sounds like it's going to be boring, but it's really not. No. At no time are you bored. At no time are you like, all right, already, let's move on. Let's have something happen. How long is he just going to float around here? You know, and also I love the fact that they never become best friends.
Uh-huh.
It maintains a realism.
Yeah.
And also when it's all said and done, it has a totally different subtext and a different kind of vibe looking back on it.
Mm-hmm.
Ang Lee finally made a good movie. I mean, for that, he deserves some applause. Way to go, Ang Lee. Way to go. Don't ever go back to comic books.
So I take it you didn't like Lust Caution?
No, that was his little NC-17
yeah.
soft porn movie? No. I didn't see it. Why would I want to see that? Name it. Tell me. Give me a compelling argument of why I would want to watch Lust Caution.
It was a good movie.
Yeah. Oh, no. You didn't do it. Didn't sell me, sorry. And man, I thought that was brilliant in Life of Pi, like how he handled like the whole, the wreck, and yep. then him like trying to figure things out, but then occasionally you'd see like a shark swim by. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that he handled the sharks in the water was so matter of fact that it took this whole level of creepiness that's been missing from any shark being introduced in a movie in a long time.
Yeah. To where before, it's like they would always introduce the shark, but the shark was going to then become the antagonist.
Yeah, and that was the main antagonist, and in this it wasn't.
Yeah.
It's like these sharks were just another element out there.
Exactly.
And that's what made it really kind of creepy and unnerving, and it was just, yeah, I thought it was great. It had some of the best cinematography I've seen in a long time. Yeah. And even the stuff that was like kind of fantastical and like while you're watching, you're kind of like, okay, where is this going? This is this could go to like a really kind of dumb place.
Yeah, this could get dumb quick fast.
But then once it's all said and done, and you know he kind of tells his story, and you realize exactly what did happen. You know, it's like okay, and
or what might have happened.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, but yeah, I mean it was cool. And yeah. it's and you understand the things that he said and why he told the story, you know, and yeah, I thought it was good. I would highly recommend it.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So, let's get to the good movie, finally.
Finally!
The Hobbit!
An Unexpected Journey. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to call it The Hobbit Part 1.
Yeah. So it wasn't until I was looking this stuff up that, okay, you actually do have different subtitles to differentiate the three films. Part one.
All right, let's start off. Definitely. Alex, format, what did you see it in?
I saw it in 3D, not IMAX.
Okay, so, and you aren't sure if it was the 48 frames or the 24 frames?
I'm reasonably certain it was the 48.
Okay.
But from what I've understood, the IMAX 3D is supposedly like the official, you know, we filmed it intended format. So,
what'd you think?
You know, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'll admit, going into this movie, I really had my doubts.
Yeah, I know that you haven't been real pimping.
No, I have not.
And I've been the more excitable one about it.
You definitely have. Okay, here's my thing.
Okay, let's hear your thing.
I'm so glad because I finally figured this out. I've been trying to figure this out since these fucking movies came out. Yeah, you know, I saw Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, Return of the King when they were theatrical.
Okay.
I enjoyed them.
Okay.
I did. I even saw the extended cuts on DVD.
Of all of them?
Of all of them.
Okay.
Again, you know, I was able to sit through them. I enjoyed them for what they were. But they never really grabbed me.
Okay.
You know, it's like everybody around me was just like, oh my God, these movies are the most amazing movies ever made. I'm just going, we're not drinking the same Kool-Aid. I can't get into these movies the way you people do. Even the books. I tried reading the books. I'm just going, you know.
Let's leave the books out. The books suck.
Well,
the books are painful to get through.
The books are pretty dry. I kept thinking, it's like, damn, it's like, what am I not getting from this? You know, what am I not pulling? And it was finally, as I was getting ready for this show, and we've got our format or our special feature coming up that we'll get to in a minute, but I was watching one of the films for it, and in fact I was watching Legend, and that's when it hit me, is the fact that the Lord of the Rings films, they're not fun. These are supposedly like fantasy adventure films. They're not fun. Nobody in these movies is having any fun. People are doing all this shit begrudgingly. Everybody in these movies is so downtrodden with, you know, it's like Sauron is, you know, killing off the trees, the wasteland, the orcs will come, waves of despair have hit the people. Everybody just walks around just so morose, and everybody is going off on their quest just begrudgingly, not because it's like the thing to do, or, you know, it's like, oh, cool, in the spirit of adventure, let's go. It's just like, oh, I have to take the ring. It is now my burden to bear. I alone must take this and plod on through three movies. And I'm just going, fuck me, no wonder. I mean, this is, like I said, these whole movies are just rather morose. I'm just going, that's it. Nobody's having any fun. This is supposed to be an adventure story. You're supposed to have fun. And then when I finally saw The Hobbit, and I was, like I said, going into it, I was kind of going, oh, fuck, I really hope that we're not going to have three more movies of walking through Middle-earth. Because that was the other thing, too. It's like with the Lord of the Rings films, it's just everything is just walking. Yeah, very little action is going. Just a lot of walking. It was going, God. Mm. But yeah, it's like suddenly I'm watching this film. I'm about maybe halfway through it. Once I get over the whole film format and everything else that's going on, then I'm just kind of going, all right. Once I kind of get into the storyline, I start to realize it's like, okay, this is an adventure. Granted, these people aren't like, you know, yuck, 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 and, you know, laughing a minute, but they're getting into the spirit of adventure. They're kind of having fun with it. They're off on a quest to improve things, not just keep the world from sucking more. And I started thinking back, because I've always enjoyed the book, The Hobbit. That's why I made it through that book, and I started in on Fellowship of the Rings, and I'm just going, wow, this is dry.
So did you find the books morose as well, like a distinction between the books?
Yeah, I found the books, like I said, I found them pretty dry. You know,
Well, that's different.
I wasn't getting into it.
I mean, that's completely different than what you're talking about. What I'm asking you
is... I wasn't getting into the whole spirit of adventure. I was not getting any of that. It was, again, it's the whole thing of, okay, you know, it's like my uncle Bilbo left me this ring, and now it's, oh, okay, I've got to be the one to go take it. And, you know, Gandalf is all the time like, Frodo, with a heavy heart that I tell you that you must take this journey, and you must go, and you must save us all from...
So basically you just don't like the more serious tone. I mean, number one, you're completely wrong about everything you've said about Lord of the Rings, but I mean, you're entitled to your opinion.
Well,
it's not intended to be a fun movie. It's not Labyrinth. You know, it's not supposed to have little Muppets. Essentially...
I don't need little Muppets, but...
Well, I mean, Legend... I don't know. I don't really see what you're... I mean, I don't know. I think the whole thing you made was just really kind of weird. What was fun about Legend? The darkness is coming out, killing everything off. The second-to-last unicorn has its horn chopped off. It dies. It's morose. The lady's dying. She's, like, kept by the Lord of... the Lord of Darkness. Jack is, like, trying to figure things out. Winter's coming. Everyone's dying off. I mean... They go to that cottage, everyone's like frozen to death in the middle of everything. What was fun and happy about that, exactly?
I didn't say it was fun and happy, but they did at least have...
Well, you're saying that, like, Lord of the Rings is just dark and morose, and everyone's just so burdened about that. Oh, and there's this... People are killing trees, and it's just depressing. It's sad. I don't want my fantasy to be sad. It needs to be fun and lighthearted and adventure. And I'm not seeing the difference. I mean, Legend wasn't fun and...
Well, we'll talk about Legend when we get to it, but...
Well, we're covering this point that you just made, a distinction that, like, I don't know, to me, I thought I didn't see really any difference. And, I mean, The Hobbit was still pretty, I mean, a race was kicked out of their home.
Yeah.
And has been scattered, and then finally, one heir is deciding to reclaim this home, and that's what, you know, you've got, like, these clans... But, like, all these other ones won't join. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really see this one as, like, lighthearted, happy, fun.
It's not lighthearted, don't get me wrong. But it just, the whole thing of just them versus Smaug.
Which isn't really about this at all. I mean, first one isn't about them versus Smaug in any way.
Yes, we'll get into Smaug in the second film. But,
I'm of the variety, I think. You know, Lord of the Rings is probably some of the best films made.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're definitely in my top, 10 of all time.
I enjoyed The Hobbit. I
I did too. Now, it did have a lot more comedic relief, I would say.
Yeah.
I
could have done without a couple of the songs. I felt that it was kind of becoming a music video after a while, but...
You know what, though? I actually enjoyed that addition. I thought it was kind of cool, especially at the beginning, well, and like with... I thought it did a great job of establishing the dwarf culture.
I will admit, by the time they would sing the end,
and kind of...
Yeah. It's like, at first it was getting kind of annoying, but then by the time I got to the end, I'm kind of going... I can see why they left the songs in, because it, like you said, it established their culture and how they communicated and what they did. And
I thought
I
thought he did a pretty great job of distinguishing the 14 dwarves or the 13 dwarves.
That was my other thing,
just
too.
By kind of how they looked.
Yeah, it's like, know, each one had their own kind of unique look, but
they all looked the same except for Thorin. I mean, he didn't even look like a dwarf much.
No,
he needed a fat nose. I mean, he pretty much just looked a short Aragorn.
Yeah,
so.
Because well, that was the thing, because I remember even in the preview, because I just wrote some of these down, because you're going, all right, so you've got Gandalf, Bilbo, Thorin. Okay, these are like the characters you're getting to know. But then you also have Balin, Dwalin, Biffer, Bofur, Bomber, Feely, Keely, Oin, Gloin, Nori, Dori, and Ori. And I'm just going, how the fuck am I supposed to keep all these names straight? You know, I was like, I was having a hard enough time keeping Sauron and Saruman. I'm going, all right, which one's which? All right, Christopher Lee was...
Well, and that's the... I agree, because all of it sounds the same. Even like, because what was the name of the mountain? It was like Orgor or Oregon or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's like almost just like Boromir, Aramir, Faramir, Aragon, Oregon, Faragon, Tarragon.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it can all kind of be the same.
Uh-huh. Although I did appreciate the fact that even Gandalf was sitting there going, all right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, good, you're all here.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And I love that. There's like a couple of different times where he's just counting them as they're running by, making sure they're all accounted for. But
it's like, there's no way I'm going to keep all these damn names straight, but it's like, I can count 13 noses and know I've got everybody. All right, let's go!
Yeah.
Right out of here.
Yeah, I loved it. I will see it again before it leaves the theater, and I will see it again in IMAX 3D.
Yeah, I figure I'll go see it in IMAX 3D just to, you know, see the way it was intended. And yeah, like, so I could easily see it again.
I had a blast. Special features.
Hell yeah.
All right, this month for a special feature, we're going to do a couple different top five lists. Start us off, we're going to do top five favorite fantasy films. So,
in case the Hobbit's got you wanting some more fantasy adventure films, here's our top five list. Quincy, you want to go ahead and lead us off?
My top one is Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
I love these films. I've seen them numerous times. They don't ever get old. It usually takes me just like watching 5 minutes of it, and I get sucked right back in, and I end up wanting to watch all of them. Okay. I love them. I know people have criticisms. I know people, you know, it's fine. It's a lot of it I can't argue with.
Yeah.
It's just, it don't bother me.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me that Frodo has a burden. It wasn't supposed to be a lighthearted tale.
Yeah.
So it's not a fun little, you know, hey, you know, it's not a fun fantasy flick. It takes itself more seriously, but also Tolkien wrote him as kind of a, you know, I mean, he had just gotten out of World War I and had seen duty and hated war, and that's kind of what he wrote these stories about. I mean, he infused his worldview into him. He was a naturalist, which is why, you know, the trees are the wise ones, and it's the worst thing in the world for, you know, the evil orcs are cutting down the trees and just using it for fuel to make oil and to crank out these war machines and these other soldiers. And, you know, I mean, it's like, once you kind of see where Tolkien was coming from when writing them, it's not hard to kind of see how his worldview has been infused into him.
Okay.
And kind of appreciate, you know, these people allying together from these different disparaging groups to face this common evil that was threatening to take over the world. So, you know, so to me, I see them as allegories of war and not like a fun adventure.
Sure.
So,
okay.
First, on your list.
First one on my list, just going off the top of my head here, Conan the Barbarian.
That's a good one.
Oh, I love this movie. Directed by John Milius, with, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger making his big breakout role. John Milius and Oliver Stone.
Okay.
Co-wrote it. And I mean, you've got, you know, Sandler Bergman, who was just coming off of, what was that, All That Jazz?
What? Who? Who?
Valeria.
Who's that? Is that the chick?
Yeah.
Okay.
The love interest. Yeah.
You gotta realize, most people don't retain the names of these actors and actresses that were in one movie back in the early 80s and hasn't done shit since then. Okay? That's just, you retain it, and that's great. You're an idiot savant when it comes to that. But you gotta realize, no one else is. So, you know, some clarification may be needed. Yeah. She was in her, that other dude. Basically, the three of them, they were the Thief Guild or whatever.
Yeah, her and Jerry Lopez.
Oh, yeah, he's good.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great fantasy. If you've never seen it, I don't know. I know some people that, like, didn't see it and grow up and thinking it was great, and they find it kind of boring and cheesy.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think
Conan
the
Destroyer is cheesy, but Conan the Barbarian,
I thought that movie was Conan the Destroyer brilliant. Is cheesy.
Yes.
If anyone tries to say that that isn't a piece of crap, they're full of it.
Yeah.
They're full of what they're claiming it isn't. So.
Well, I mean, the cool thing about the 82 Milius version is essentially, I mean, it's just the story of survival of the fittest. Only the strong survive. And they just happen to use Conan as a way of telling the story.
And it's ultimately like a vigilante flick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's him avenging his parents' death and him being put in, you know, as a slave.
Well, hell, his whole village was wiped out. So, it's just, you know, he's got a people to avenge, you know, so.
But yeah, I mean, I think the special effects are still incredible. I mean, when he fights that giant snake, I think it still looks incredible.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, I watch it now and it's just like, man, how did they do that?
Yeah.
That is an awesome looking big animatronic. And I've never seen a making of Conan of you.
No.
So, I mean, I would love to see, like, how they made it and everything.
Yeah.
And there's few things as cool looking. I mean, the iconic imagery of Conan with the war paint.
Yeah.
The black
The war tiger paint. Stripes, yeah.
Yeah, the tiger stripes. So cool looking. So, yeah. And, you know, you got James Earl Jones as the villain.
Tulsa Doom.
Yeah, and I mean, a great villain.
Yep.
It's a great movie. I still can watch it.
Even Max von Sydow, you know, playing King Osric.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was my list, too.
Yeah.
So I'll just scratch mine off.
Well, there you go.
But I'm going to stick something else in there because I've got a bunch.
Yeah, about that.
So next one on mine is Harry Potter, the Universe. The book is better. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Hey.
I know it's your segment, but hey, I'm going to use it. The books are way better than the movies, but the movies are still pretty great.
Okay.
Yeah, I love it. I love the world that she created. I do think that the movies kind of got sucky. But I still think, as films, I think that they're very entertaining still.
Yeah.
They just don't capture a lot of the magic of the books.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, you know, when you're watching the movie, being a huge fan of the books. I mean, the series of books are probably the few series I've ever read more than once.
Okay. Yeah, I have yet to hear anybody say that they read the book and hated it. Everybody's just been like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So amazing.
I definitely was drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things, you know, when the first one came out, I was very hardcore Christian, and I mainly went to see it to see how horrible this thing was.
Yeah.
Because it was basically, if you're letting your kids read this, you might as well just be giving them the Satanic Bible.
Yeah.
And just, you know, teaching them how to make spells and become witches. So I went to see it because my kids wanted to see it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of pre-screen it. So I saw it by myself. I was the weirdo 35-year-old sitting in the theater by himself watching Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. It was so not a 1-2-3 how to become Wiccan.
Exactly.
It was essentially someone took the wizard role of D&D and said, well, how do they get to that point?
Exactly.
And then she created this whole universe of that.
Yes.
And I thought it was fantastic and the imagination involved. I mean, I was so enamored of that first movie. When I walked out, I came home and my wife was like, well, how bad was it? And I was like, it was incredible. We got to take the entire family. I got to see this thing again. I loved it. I mean, and I still pull them all out. Me and my kids will have, like, Harry Potter marathons.
Oh, shit.
Watch all of them. And I would highly recommend the audiobooks. Okay. Jim Dale reads them, but he creates unique voices for each of the characters to where you can actually tell once you get familiar with it, you can tell who's speaking before he says who it is. The accent.
Okay.
And the voice. And it's impeccable. It's almost like listening to a radio production of it, except you have all the detail and, you know, they're unabridged. So,
awesome.
Yeah. Highly recommend the audiobooks. Okay. I pull those out and listen to them at work all the time.
Yeah.
I love it. Actually, I need to do it again. Thanks for reminding me.
Hey, guess I know what you're doing on Monday.
So, bam, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. All right.
People are going to really know my sincere level of geekiness after this podcast. It has me a little nervous. Just a smidgey. 2.7, I guess.
Number two for me, the 1981 version, to clarify, Clash of the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man, I love this movie.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
See, damn it.
I know.
Okay, that's replacing Conan. Oh, wait, no, you just did it.
I just did
it. So, yeah, I'm going to just hop. I'm piggybacking though. That is a great one, too.
I'm doing it now.
That movie changed my life as a kid.
No, it just, that, yeah. I mean, the special effects, classic Harryhausen.
Yeah, I would say it hasn't really aged very well.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's pretty bad. I mean, like, the special effects are pretty bad. The direction's pretty bad. Everyone's kind of really over the top. But it is a great fantasy, and it's Greek mythology, you know?
Exactly,
I mean, it doesn't really follow Greek mythology, but it's got the names and the creatures and all that, you know? I mean, they kind of throw it all in there, but it was great.
Oh, I enjoy the hell out of it. I would much rather see, like, Harry Hamlin fighting, you know, clay models than to see Naomi Watts watching dinosaurs fight a giant ape that don't even look like they're in the same room. So, that's just me. What's next on your list?
Star Wars. And by Star Wars, I say Star Wars Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi up to they landed on Endor.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, I still distinctly remember when my mom and dad went to see Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning, my mom saying, "Oh, Quinn, we saw this movie last night." And she said, "It has all these monsters in it." So my mind immediately is Godzilla.
Uh-huh.
Mothra. And she's like, "Except it's not monsters at all like what you've ever seen. It's like, there's like robots and spaceships." And so I'm like, you know, I mean, and then I remember seeing it and walking out of it just like, oh my gosh, that changed my life.
Oh, hell yeah.
So
I was in third grade when that movie came out, and I remember seeing just the preview, and I'm just going, "I gotta go see this.
Yeah.
This movie looks amazing. Oh my God." And it's like, I remember my mom and I, we went to go see it. And I walked out and was going, "This movie is amazing."
Oh, yeah,
It was every bit of amazement that the preview promised me it would be. In fact, I still remember, I mean, Star Wars had its initial release. And then they brought it back. And it was playing at Oak Park Mall. And one of my best friends and I, every Saturday, why we even bothered to, like, try and even think of something else, I don't know. But it's like every Saturday, it's like I'd be on the phone with them. It's like, you know, "Hey, what you doing? You know, so you want to get together and hang out?" It's like, "All right, cool." You know, "So, well, you want to go see a movie or something?" "All right, well, what's playing?" This or Star Wars. "Let's go see Star Wars." For like about a month. And again, it may have only been two or three times.
But sure, sure.
It's like, I could have sworn we saw that movie at least four times.
All summer.
Yeah.
Like every summer, every Saturday.
We probably saw it at least four times, because I'm sure the damn thing played for a month.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
And it's like, we were there, like, every freaking Saturday. Even my mom was just like, "You're going to go see that movie again?" It's like, "Mom, I got to go see this movie. This movie is so amazing."
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, and I had the figures, I had all that shit.
But, you know, back then, if you wanted to see a movie, you went to the theater and seen it.
Exactly.
There was no guarantee that it would.
Video?
Well, and even when there was on video, it was like 2 years before they would come out. You know, I mean, not back when Star Wars, but it's like once home video was an option.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like, if you want to see it, you see it now, because otherwise it's going to be like 2 or 3 years, and that's if you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you happen to find a store that rents it.
Yep.
You know, so it wasn't a guarantee, whereas now it's like, I can wait 3 months.
Exactly.
I waited this long.
Yeah.
I can wait 3 more months.
Yeah.
It'll be out. Or I can just wait a week and try to find a bootleg. I mean, or whatever, you know, there's so many different options now.
I know. It's...
Yeah.
Especially now that everything's digital, it's like people are just kind of like, "Oh, well, I can watch it in digital at the theater or watch it digitally at home.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, like I've said before, you know, there's been several movies that while watching in the theater, I'm like, well, I can't wait to see this on Blu-ray. You know, because it looks better on my TV than it does in the theater. Hmm. And The Hobbit was the first one that I could say it didn't.
Yeah.
When I watched The Hobbit, I was like, wow, I'm actually seeing the HD version.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm watching the Blu-ray of this. I don't feel like I have to wait to see the best possible quality of this. So, yeah. It was nice.
Yeah.
So,
and you got to see it in 3D.
That's right! And I thought the 3D was very subtle.
Yeah.
I thought it did a great job of, like, immersing you into the world. And I mean, dude, that when the mountains start fighting each other.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Uh-huh.
And like all the boulders and just when they would, the rocks would explode and stuff. And it not never came out at you.
Yeah.
But it was just phenomenal. You're just watching it going, wow, yeah. Whoa, that is cool.
And I also appreciated the fact that the mountains fighting each other did not become like its own 20-minute segment.
That's right.
It was short, sweet, simple, to the point. It's like, how is this getting the story told? And you're like,
yeah.
Yes. Finally, you're getting it right.
That's cool. It was good.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Yeah, what's your next one, buddy?
My next one. The Beastmaster.
Oh, yeah. What movie did that? I mean, that movie changed your life as a kid. That was, like, the best movie to go tell your friends about.
Hell, yeah.
Because you're like, man, I saw this movie last night. This guy's born from a cow. And then there's, I mean, it just had so many insane things. Uh-huh. Not to mention Tiny Roberts. Ha-ha's.
Hello.
So, yeah. A Beastmaster was incredible.
You know, I remember seeing this with my dad, and honestly, I don't know if I would have seen it if Tiny Roberts hadn't been in it.
Oh, really? Because of your dad?
He was the one who was like, yeah, let's go see, because I think I'd probably seen a preview for it, so I would have probably ended up seeing it eventually. But yeah, it's like, it was just my Sunday to be with him, and so he was just like, let's go see Beastmaster. I'm like, okay. I was like, yeah, Tiny Roberts. I'm like, all right, let's go.
Yeah, yeah, it was a great movie. I mean, the things I remember distinctly is just how insane it was.
Yeah.
And that it had the dad from Good Times.
Yeah, John Amos.
Yeah, John Amos. So, yeah. But yeah, that was just a fun, insane kitchen seat type fantasy that the 80s was great with.
Exactly. I loved it. It was...
Who directed that?
Don Coscarelli.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
The guy that did Phantasm.
Yeah. I just really enjoyed the shit out of that.
Yeah, that is a good one. You remind me of the babe. Babe with the power. Power of voodoo. 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 Do what? Remind me of the babe. Next on my list is Labyrinth.
Yeah.
That was a great one.
That was.
Got Jennifer Connelly,
yeah.
David Bowie, and a whole lot of Muppets.
Yep.
Or I guess they're puppets. They're not technically Muppets because they don't belong in the Muppet universe.
Well, okay, yeah, technically. So, although it was
Jim they're Henson. Puppets, but it's Jim Henson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he created an entire world with all these different just neat, cool monsters, creatures. Yeah, I love the soundtrack. I mean, my family, all I got to do. I mean, really, you remind me of the babe. That's most of the time, that's all you got to say. You throw that out, you're going to get someone saying, what babe? The babe with the power. What power? The power of voodoo. Voodoo, do what? Might be the babe. I mean, that's just a standard. Around these parts, that's a standard. If you don't know that shit, you're out. You're not part. You're out of the house. So, yeah, it's a great movie. I saw that movie so many times, and I still watch it. It was one of those... It was like, I was glad when I had kids, so I was like, oh, now I got a good reason to keep watching this yearly. Yeah, it's really fun. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've heard of it. If you haven't, look it up.
If you speak English, you've heard of Labyrinth.
Yeah, you should have.
Who doesn't know Labyrinth by this point?
I mean, yeah, you got David Bowie smuggling fruit. See Labyrinth. There's something in it for you.
Exactly.
It's like a cornucopia of good times.
It is.
So.
All right. Next up on my list, Legend.
Legend.
Yes.
It's a good one.
Yes. Now, admittedly, I saw the director's cut. And I guess you've seen the theatrical cut, which you...
That is the only cut that exists. That is
the only cut.
That's that, it.
Okay.
That's it. And even if he would have kept that soundtrack... Because really, to me... It's the visuals and the soundtrack. The story blows in that movie. I mean, it is D&D light. It's completely generic. It establishes nothing of that world. It doesn't establish any of these different like races and the creatures. It's just kind of a kitchen sink hodgepodge of, you know, whatever. You got like a couple dwarves that show up.
Yeah.
You got like this weird elf creature dude.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, I mean, it's like, it's a very weird movie. But visually, it's amazing. And in my opinion, the soundtrack is what really establishes the vibe of that movie. If it ain't got Tangerine Dream, it's not Legend.
Okay.
You know, I mean, what did you think?
Well, admittedly, I mean, I've seen the theatrical cut in the theaters. I have not seen the theatrical cut in a while, like a number of years. I've seen it since the theaters, but it's been a long time.
Okay.
For this segment, I was going through doing some research. I'm like, yeah, Legend. It's like, God, I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Let's make sure before I say it's one of my top five favorites that it's still one of my top five favorites.
Sure, sure.
So I was able to finally find the director's cut because people have been like, oh, you know, it's like if you liked it, you really should see the director's cut. I'm like, okay. And yeah, I'd heard about the Goldsmith score and everything. I'm just kind of, all right, well, how different could it really be? Now, admittedly, not having seen the theatrical cut in double-digit years, I really couldn't tell you if there were added scenes. There was still every scene I remember in the film, so I don't believe anything was cut. You know, there might have been like one or two extended scenes, maybe. You know, I'd have to check running times and, you know, contrast compare. But you did pretty much hit it on the head with the Tangerine Dream soundtrack. Because I do remember, especially just sitting in the theater, hearing the Tangerine Dream soundtrack and seeing this whole thing visually. And it just had this really big,
dreamy
flow to it that I was going, okay. And the Goldsmith score, it's not horrible, but it really did just kind of put a different feel to the film. It was kind of going,
yeah. I would imagine it would take away the fantastical kind of, because with the Tangerine Dream soundtrack, it almost has like a dreamlike quality, which is kind of what it's going for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, the whole sequence where the unicorn getting the horn cut off and Winter just falling and him being stuck under the ice trying to break through, it all has a very dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that I haven't seen the director's cut.
Okay.
Personally, I think that George Lucas gets a bad rap because Ridley Scott dicks with his movies way more than George Lucas does. And people seem to be okay because it's Ridley Scott.
Not having seen the director's cut, I guess you have no idea if anything's been added or cut.
Yeah, so. I don't know.
Okay.
I was close to buying it.
Yeah.
Until I was standing in line looking at it, and I was like, wait, what? With a different score?
Yeah.
Oh, no thanks. I have no desire. I mean, I own the Legend soundtrack. I still listen to it.
Okay.
I mean, I will pull it out like in the winter and listen to it because to me it captures just a dreamy kind of snowscape type evening. Yeah, I mean, there's certain soundtracks like that that, for me, it's just as important as the visuals. The soundtracks have established that movie in my mind. So, last one on my list is Escape from New York. Now, some might say that this isn't a fantasy, but in my mind, any movie that turns a state into a prison is pretty fantastical. So, I'm clinging to it.
Okay.
It is. It's fantasy. Because you know why?
A bit of a stretch.
I haven't mentioned Escape from New York enough on this podcast, number one. And number two, you took up Conan and Legend, so I'm throwing in Escape from New York because I think it is a fantasy.
All right.
And I love it.
Fair enough.
Yep. But yeah, it's not really a fantasy. What about you? What's your last one?
Last one on the list, Excalibur.
Oh, yeah.
John Boorman's classic Arthur tale. Man, this movie was just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know?
It was very infamous for how violent it was.
Yeah.
When it came out. I remember that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Being an R-rated,
you know,
King Arthur movie.
Yeah, knights in armor, you know, sword, sorcery.
Because it really tried to, instead of like, I mean, because it's a lot gritty, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not... fluffy and white. And
yeah.
No.
So it's not a fun adventure?
It...
Is it morose, maybe?
No.
Some might say. Sorry, I'm just giving you a hard time. It's going to be the theme. So, yeah. So it told. I haven't seen it since I was probably in sixth grade.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed it back then, but it's been one of those. It's like I've thought about seeing it recently, uh-huh. but I'm kind of like, eh. I don't really want to taint the image, and I know the story so well. It's kind of like, do I really need to see a movie again about King Arthur? So, but you've watched it recently.
Yes.
I watched it recently.
It does still hold up really well. Yeah, I was really.
Maybe I'll try to find it then. Did you buy it or just rent it?
Just rented it.
Yeah. Okay. Library?
Checked it out from the library, yep.
Well, I should probably be able to find it then.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm over at the library, I might. If I see it, I'll check it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's. I was pleasantly surprised. Because, like you, I was kind of going, you know, well, do I still like this movie? Can I throw this on my top five list?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I can still put it up there. All right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got some cast members in there you might not realize were in there.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so what, Liam Neeson's like, what,
Liam Neeson?
Does he play, like, a little kid or something?
No. No, he plays Sir Gawain.
Okay.
You know, Helen Mirren is Morgana, Arthur's sister. Let's see, who else was in there? Nigel Terry was King Arthur. Nicole Williamson was Merlin. I think, you know, it's like just that, this movie in particular, really established, like, that mental image for Merlin. Because up until that point, it's like, sure, you had the animated version where it's like you've always had the little pointed wizard's hat and everything else, but it's like you start bringing Merlin into the real world and suddenly he's got like that silver bald plate and just the robes and the dragon staff and all that. You're just going, yeah, you know, just...
And this was the movie where he has that silver helmet thing?
This is the one, yes.
Okay.
This is where everybody got that mental image from, so...
Mm.
Yes, check it out.
You know what? I'm going to scratch Escape from New York.
Okay.
Dark Crystal.
There you go. There you go.
That's a great, great
movie. Hell yeah.
It's kind of a bummer. Talk about a movie that is mirthless. I mean, that movie is... I remember seeing it as a kid and just being kind of like, damn, the Muppets got dark. It's like, did Jim Henson go through a divorce or what?
The dark side of the Muppets.
Did he lose the baby? Or, I mean, it's like you just got like these mean crows killing these little innocent creatures. But yeah, that was a really cool movie. Amazing puppetry, great creature design.
Yeah, that's another one I need to go back and revisit.
I own it, you can borrow it.
Okay, cool, because yeah, I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Yeah, it's good, it's held up.
Yeah.
You know, just the big beetle creatures that would
you know,
hold them in their ribs.
Uh-huh.
Then you had like the big, tall, long-legged creatures that they would ride, the halflings would ride, the gelflings, I think. Were
Yeah, the gelflings, called. yeah.
And then the old lady who could pop her eyes out and look around.
Yeah.
The bag lady. Yeah, I mean, it's just got a lot of cool imagery. And the Skeksis, who were the big...
Skeksis, yeah.
The crow guys. And
God.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. I'll replace Escape from New York.
There you go.
And, you know, I got to mention Escape from New York anyway. I'm not editing that out. So. We'll just leave that whole addendum in there.
How about that?
So... I think that's it. You got anything else?
That's it for me.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Alright, special feature number two. In lieu of the world ending, supposedly, on the 21st, we figured it might be kind of fun to just throw out our top five favorite disaster movies. Okay, well, the problem I encountered is I really don't like any disaster films. I was trying to come up with a top five, and actually I realized it was going to be easier for me to come up with the top five worst ones I've ever seen.
Fair enough.
Okay. Anyway, what why don't you name some off your list, buddy?
Interestingly enough.
Oh, I mean, what? Disaster Flicks had their heyday, late 70s, early 80s. Of course, this is like a list made for you, my friend. How did you narrow it down to five?
Oh, man, it wasn't easy.
I know it wasn't easy. I'm like, looking at this list. I'm like, I bet he likes that. I bet he likes that. I wonder, I mean, I was more trying to guess what you're going to have on your list, so I'm kind of curious. Like, let's see.
What did Irwin Allen produce?
There you go.
Oh, man. All right, well, starting off my list. No particular order, just however the cards happen to fall. First off, Earthquake.
Mm.
You know, interestingly enough, co-written by Mario Puzo. Yeah, I know.
That's weird. And hey, tell people what he's known for.
Primarily,
Godfather.
Godfather, yeah.
And other mob-related stories, right?
He did a couple of other mob-related stories, but he also like wrote the script for Superman the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's done a lot of different screenplays, but yeah, you're just going, wow, Mario, really? Okay, cool. Now we're playing with power. Shit, I mean, of course, you got everybody under the sun, you know, Charlton Heston, Ava Gardner.
Well, that's in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And 80s disaster flick. You just had, like, that was basically the movie poster. You saw whatever, like, the airplane or whatever, then just a bunch of photos of, like, the entire cast.
The literal cast of thousands. I mean, of course, you've got George Kennedy, you know, who was, like, in all of these. I am totally convinced. If George Kennedy dies before the 21st, the Earth will literally spin off its axis.
So you're probably keeping close tabs on Google News.
Hell yes. I'm telling you, it's like they're, you know, it's like we've already lost Charlton Heston. Gene Hackman's retired. You know, Steve McQueen, Paul Newman.
That's why they don't make him anymore.
These guys are dead. You know, it's like George Kennedy. He's the last one we have left. If he dies, there's nobody left to save us. So, you know, yeah, the Earth will just spin off its axes and that'll be it.
Man.
So, yeah, Earthquake. You know, great movie.
So what was the disaster for Earthquake? An earthquake?
Yeah.
Bam! Okay.
A big 7.4 basically hits Los Angeles.
Okay.
So.
What's the next one?
The Towering Inferno.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be on your list.
Oh, hell yeah. How could it not be?
I don't know.
I mean, that movie's just awesome. I watch that one maybe twice a year. I still enjoy
that one. Had Faye Dunaway,
Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, everybody under the sun, William Holden, Fred Astaire, Jennifer Jones, Richard Chamberlain, O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, and the plot of that is a high-rise building is... There's a fire, like, down on the ground floor, and the people high up have to get out?
Yeah, basically, you've got, like, this brand-new structural high-rise building. It's, like, about 80 stories. And somewhere around the 50th floor is this fire that breaks out because of faulty wiring, because Richard Chamberlain cheaped out. Not to give away any spoilers, but, you know, Paul Newman kind of figures it out within the first 30 minutes, so I'm not giving too much away.
Okay. The movie came out in what year?
1974.
We don't have to worry about spoilers. People have had 45 years to watch the fucking thing, okay? Spoil away, buddy. Don't worry about it. Don't even worry about it. You just say whatever you need to say. Don't worry about nothing. So basically there's people stuck in the upper floors.
You know, the fire department is trying to fight the fire as best they can, but, you know, they can only fight fires up to about the 9th floor. So, of course, you know, they're rather limited in what all they can do. And, of course, the fire is spreading in both directions.
And that's the first act, and then the rest of the movie is everyone suing the city because the firefighters weren't able to get up us past the 9th floor with fighting the fire. And
no, that would be the remake.
Oh, okay.
This one's just basically dealing with, you know, it's like the fire is basically taking over the building and how do we put the fire out and
okay.
You know, who's going to die and who's not. Next up is The Swarm. Another Irwin Allen classic. Actually, Irwin Allen directed this one. John Guilerman actually directed The Towering Inferno. Allen just produced it.
Okay.
But,
Swarm about killer bees.
About killer bees. Came out back in, what is it, 78, I believe, when everybody was under the big panic of, oh my God, the African killer bees are coming. Oh my God, oh my God. So, of course, Irwin Allen's like, ooh, I smell money. So, you know, yeah, it's like, let's have fun. What would happen if African killer bees came? Well, luckily, Michael Caine, you know, happens to know a thing or two about African killer bees, and so he was...
And migration patterns.
And migration patterns. Always an important thing to understand.
Yeah, when dealing with killer bees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
They're basically trying to figure out, it's like, okay, A, how can we stop them, and B, pardon the pun, you know, how can we, get ahead of them and, you know, stop them before they just spread.
Sting to death.
Yes.
Which next one?
Next up is The Poseidon Adventure.
Yep, I knew that one.
Oh, man, yeah.
You know what we should have done? We should have had where I guessed. Where I would have just turned out, what about Poseidon Adventure? And you're like, yes, that's on there. And then you explain that, and I'm like, what about The Swarm?
Hey!
Because I knew Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, and The Swarm for sure. And I'm pretty sure there might be an Airport 77 somewhere around. Concord.
Have you been looking at my words? So yeah, The Poseidon Adventure. Again, you know, it's produced by Irwin Allen.
Especially a giant yacht flips over.
Yeah, it's a cruise ship.
Yeah.
And it gets...
Oh, yeah, a cruise ship.
Yeah. And it gets hit by this tidal wave, and it flips. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many undertones and everything else going through this, and especially just to watch Gene Hackman and Ernest Borgnine just, you know, going head-to-head through this movie, just going, wow. You know, that just makes it for me. But, yeah, I mean, of course, you've got the all-star cast of Stella Stevens, Roddy McDowall, you know, Jack Albertson, Red Buttons, even an early appearance from Pamela Sue Martin. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Savant.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it in a while, or if you've never seen it, check it out. It's still good. What can I say?
There you go.
Yep. And last but not least, oh, look, it's Airport 77.
Weird! Man, I must be psychic.
Oh, wait. I have a vision. I mean, admittedly, I mean, of all of the Airport films, this one's definitely my favorite. You know, you got Jack Lemmon.
You realize you're probably, like, the only person under, like, 50, 60 that even knows that there's more than one Airport movie.
Well, you know, somebody's got to keep track of these things.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I remember them is I saw a doubleheader in the theater.
Yeah.
And I think that's the last time I saw them, so... Yeah, they really kind of went away, didn't they? The whole disaster film.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah, it's like the 80s so, kind of roll around. And
I mean, based on your love of disaster films, I would think that you're probably a huge Roland Emmerich fan. If nothing else, at least you truly appreciate him, because he's kind of like, you know, I mean, he's single-handedly brought them back and has kept them alive, right?
That is one of the things that just annoys me about Roland Emmerich. And I'll freely admit it. I mean, I walk into these films, and I kind of want to like them. And sometimes, like, he'll even come up with a few interesting concepts. I'm just going, wow, I really wish that I could enjoy this. But then he just puts his own unique spin on it, and you're just going...
His own unique spin being removes any kind of intelligence whatsoever from the screenplay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be that, yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much his spin.
Yes.
It's like, hey, great concept. How can we do it completely ignorantly?
Yes.
To where we make people feel insulted if they try to think past what's going on.
Precisely.
Yeah. You know,
you're just kind of going, oh, God, it's like your movies are such high concept, but such low intelligence. It's like, damn it, I really wish I could like you, which is why I hate that man. Him and Michael Bay. They both just annoy the shit out of me. But that's another...
All right, well, you want to run here my top five most overrated or worst disaster films?
Suck it to me.
All right. Number one, Armageddon. Bam.
There's Michael Bay right off the bat.
Independence Day.
There's Roland Emmerich.
2012.
Oh, Roland Emmerich again.
Volcano. Did you ever see that? Tommy Lee Jones?
That was the good one.
No,
that's right.
It wasn't. Dante's Peak was the good one.
No,
Yeah.
No.
No, you must not remember right. Volcano was Tommy Lee Jones basically running around saying, hey, there's lava flowing. Lava starts flowing, then they just gotta, like, dig a ditch and it's done. That was Volcano. The next one, The Core.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what everyone thinks. And that's why it's on the list. And then last and not least, and just to, you know, piss off any female viewers that may be enjoying what I've been saying. Okay. Titanic! That's the number one most overrated, worst disaster film ever made. Yep. I'm not looking for agreement. I'm just saying.
Well, you're getting it right. You might not be looking for it, but guess what?
Well, that's what I like to call a bonus.
I'm leaning towards agreeing with you.
That was mine.
All right.
Bam.
Bam.
All right, next up, we thought instead of doing recently viewed or whatever, it would be kind of fun to just take a look at holiday movies that are going to be coming out between now and the end of the year, and just kind of give our opinions if
since all the big shows come out at the end of the month, and our show is still here in the middle of the month.
Yeah, so, just kind of, I mean, we won't go through everything that's coming out, we'll just kind of... Let's just mention the ones that look interesting.
Yeah, let's gloss over some of the stuff.
Okay, any that you're looking forward to?
The only thing I can honestly say I'm looking forward to is Jack Reacher.
Yeah, I think that looks good.
I remember seeing the first teaser trailer for that and just going, man, this really looks like it could be just a big guilty pleasure. I've since seen another preview that kind of expands more of the plot line, and while it doesn't look to be as guilty pleasure-ish, it still looks interesting. So,
yeah, I've kind of intentionally stopped watching things for it. I do not want to know anything more about it because I never want to see it. So,
telling me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Jack Reacher as well.
I've heard interesting things about Zero Dark Thirty, although I'm still kind of riding the fence.
I think it looks good.
Yeah.
You know, it's Kathryn Bigelow, who did a great job with The Hurt Locker.
Mm-hmm. I put more faith in that than I do necessarily them telling the story, because ever since Act of Valor, which really high concept film, really poor delivery, I felt. Personally, I was kind of looking forward to that. I thought that it had a really interesting idea, the fact that they had cast actual Navy SEALs in these roles, but they talk about a movie that just went nowhere. So, you know, yeah, I'm kind of riding the fence on that one, but...
What about Django Unchained?
Django Unchained.
Is silent.
Yeah.
That, I think I would be a lot more excited for that if it didn't have Jamie Foxx in it.
I can see that.
There's something about him that just really irritates the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And even in the previews, like him saying that, I mean, just everything is just like, dude, you're not near as cool as you think you are.
I think it could be a lot of fun.
It could be.
You know.
The fact that it's Tarantino is what makes me have hope for it. Just based on, like, the trailer, it looks bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the acting looks bad.
Yeah.
But I saw a preview before Man with Iron Fist,
and
people just shooting each other left and right with blood spraying, so I'm hoping it's going to have like a Kill Bill Volume 1 kind of fun.
I think it's supposed to be like a spaghetti western kind of feel to it. But yeah.
Have you heard what the running time is? Is it like 2.5 hours again?
I want to say it's 2 hours. I haven't heard of it being excessively long, but...
Because, you know, really, with the exception of probably Kill Bill Volume 1... I can't think of a Quentin Tarantino movie that couldn't have benefited from like 15, 20 minutes being chopped off.
There's that.
I gotta say, this year, the crop of movies coming out is really kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, yeah. Because usually this is the time of year that they're trying to put all the quote-unquote good movies out.
And
it's like really, you know, end strong so that you've got all these big movies going into the Academy Awards. But
I know a lot of people are really looking forward to Les Miserables.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them.
I'm not one of them, no. It's kind of sad to say because I enjoy everybody that's in that cast, but I'm just not a big fan of epic musicals. I've seen Les Miserables live. I'm good. Yeah. You know, really, it's like if I never see it again, I'm good. I enjoyed the stage production. I thought it was really good. But that's it. You know, it's one of those things you kind of do it once. You're like, yeah, okay, been there, done that.
It just sounds kind of depressing to me.
It is. It's a very depressing story. You know, it's this story that goes on for practically two generations of this guy who's just stolen a loaf of bread, and the...
And now he's being persecuted, and...
The constable that won't leave him alone, you know? So he loses his daughter, and all his... He's going, girl! You know, but... You know, welcome to Victor Hugo.
The Cirque du Soleil movie. It looks interesting.
That could be cool.
Yeah,
that could be fun. Yeah. I've seen a couple of those shows live, and those guys just always do such an amazing job. So, to see...
I saw a preview for it. Did you see a preview of it before Life of Pi?
Yeah, I've seen a preview.
I can't figure out. It's not just a live performance.
No.
Because they're pimping it as like a fantasy movie.
Yeah, it's...
But it looks like it's pretty much the performance.
I believe it's kind of this woman that goes into this mystical world, and it's all...
Okay.
Like, the performance will go on there, so, yeah, I'll be interested to see how they do it.
Yeah, it looks interesting. So that's about all that's coming out.
Yeah, then maybe On the Road. And, again, On the Road, it's like...
That's the Jack Kerouac movie.
Yeah, the only reason why I'm interested in that is because, A, I love the book, and, B, I am, like, a huge Kerouac fan. So I'm curious to see what they've done with it. Outside of that, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. All right. That it?
That's it.
Happy hunting. Pimp our product.
All right. Well, this time around, let's see. I'd like to encourage you all to stop by the justaphase.com website. Check out our guest appearance on Krabby Katie's latest episode of Katie Gets Krabby. You can also check out Larry Duane, who has Not Ready for Radio. And while you're there, there's also something new and unique for you to check out.
Yeah, you go to the Cool Stuff tab. It's up in the upper echelons of the website. Just click on that, and it'll take you to this Amazon widget. Every movie that we mention on here... You can just click on it, and it'll take you directly to Amazon, and you can just purchase it right there. It's super easy, handy-dandy.
So, and you also help support the show by doing so.
Yeah, so make sure you check it out. It's a really cool, neat thing, and if you're into buying DVDs, it makes it really handy.
Also like to give a quick shout-out to Tyson Leslie for helping us out with all the music you've been hearing on the show. Make sure you check out his Facebook page, Tyson Leslie. You got anything else before we sign off here?
Nope.
All right. So, yeah, make sure you tune back in. Assuming that we all make it through the 21st and the Mayans don't come back and take back the world and George Kennedy doesn't die and the Earth spins off its axis, then we will see you all next year.
Yep. See you next year. Merry and happy. Tickets to the end.
This has been a Phase Media Podcast. Find us online at justaphase.com. That's Phase with a mother effin' F.
Conan! What is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women. That is good! That is good!